I'm Dave Heller.
And this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, a committee devoted to help reform the justice system says it's a moral and financial obligation. First, after a decision upholding criminal charges against entertainer Bill Cosby came down last night, it seemed that the case was picking up speed. But as WHYY's Laura Benchoff reports, Cosby's spokesperson says the defense will file an appeal of the Montgomery County judge's ruling.
Late last year, Cosby was charged with sexual assault stemming from an alleged incident at his home in Cheltenham in 2004. Cosby's lawyers had been trying to get the charges against the famous entertainer dismissed. They argued that a former district attorney's promise that he could never be prosecuted is binding. This week, Judge Stephen O'Neill ruled against dropping the charges. Now, publicist Andrew Wyatt says Cosby's attorneys are seeking further delays.
I can't tell you anything. I can just tell you that our attorneys will be appealing the matter.
But appeals usually come at the end, not at the beginning of a trial, says lawyer Brian Kent.
Procedurally, substantively, from every single aspect, this is not your typical case.
Veteran defense lawyer Thomas Bergstrom, who has no connection to the case, says because the question is whether the trial should happen at all, that puts the appeal in a special category.
It's really critical. I mean, if in fact this is a binding agreement, there shouldn't be a trial.
But it will be up to an appeals court to decide if it will revisit that now. Sorting it out could take a month or two. If the Superior Court does decide to hear an appeal from the 78-year-old entertainer, that could take a couple of years. During either window, the criminal trial proceedings scheduled to get underway next month would be paused. Laura Benchoff, WHYY News.
A special Philadelphia City Council Committee on Criminal Justice Reform is moving forward, as WHYY's Katie Colinari reports.
Committee leaders say they're building on the work being done by Philadelphia's Criminal Justice Advisory Board, which has applied for a $4 million grant to cut the city's jail population by one-third over 3 years. That includes many people who are just waiting for trial and haven't been convicted of a crime or have violated the terms of their probation. Keir Bradford Gray is chief of the Defender Association of Philadelphia and one of the committee co-chairs. She says one of her goals is to help those who'll get out of jail as a result of reforms.
So if I'm a person that gets released under an ankle monitor, I can go to programming, I can go to educational vocational training. If I have issues with domestic, I can go to some kind of pastoral counseling. A lot of churches already do this piecemeal, but they don't know how to relate it to our efforts here in the criminal justice system.
The committee will hold hearings to get input and will eventually release a report with recommendations. Council President Darrell Clark says it's a moral and a financial issue.
Because we can't continue to think that spending $35,000 a year on an individual to stay in prison is the way to go. That makes like no sense.
Although Clark spoke of the urgent need for reforms, he couldn't say exactly when the committee will issue its recommendations. Katie Colinari, WHYY News.
For most of us, selecting a program to watch on TV is a simple act. The same cannot be said for the blind and visually impaired. But as WHYY's Aaron Mosell reports, Comcast is trying to change that.
Until recently, navigating the cable giant's program guide was a tedious, time-consuming effort for blind or visually impaired customers. Tom Ludkowski is vice president of accessibility at Comcast.
All someone who's blind could do was use the channel up, channel down buttons to navigate the 1,000-channel universe, and the more than 50,000 titles that we had in our video on demand library were essentially useless.
These days, thanks to technology developed by Ludkowski's team and feedback from test groups, channel surfing is a lot less choppy for customers with X1, Comcast's newest platform.
The fault in our stars from $4.99. End January 31st, 2015.
Once enabled, voice guidance gives customers the option of having channels and program descriptions read aloud as they jump around the long list of possibilities using the arrow keys. They can also press down a button on the remote and search options by voice, a la Siri on an iPhone. When they've made their selection, customers can hit the familiar OK button and the program will fire up. They can also just use the voice control button and say, "Watch SportsCenter," for example, and the show will start playing. To the sighted, these advancements may simply make TV watching more convenient. But Ludkowski, who is blind, says they may mean a whole lot more to those who have previously navigated channels in the dark.
Everybody talks about what they've watched last night or what they're binge watching on demand or through their DVR. And you know, for someone who's blind or visually impaired, to be included in that conversation really dictates that they have the ability to navigate these on-screen menus, to be able to find what they want to watch and really understand what it is that they're about to watch.
Ludkowski also hopes the technology provides subscribers with an added sense of independence, a not-so-small issue for the blind or anyone with a disability. It's done just that for Marvin Pearson. He's a junior who lives on campus at the Overbrook School for the Blind in West Philly, where several X1 cable boxes and remotes have been installed.
Not everybody in this world is a very nice person. And so sometimes if, you bug somebody too much about, switching the channel for you, they might not be cool with it. So, being able to avoid situations like that just by having, a talking TV guide, really helps out a lot.
Going forward, Tom Ludkowski says he hopes he can create more tools to put people with disabilities on more even footing.
The only barriers are what you put up in front of you or in what other people perceive to be barriers. It's not to say that there aren't barriers, but try to find ways to overcome them, and technology can certainly be one method for that.
I'm Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania's state police commissioner says an investigation into possible cheating at the state police academy started in December, and it's involved dozens of interviews and an extensive collection of evidence. Commissioner Tyree Blocker's statement today gave no other details about what he called a full and comprehensive investigation by the Internal Affairs Unit. It comes one day after Governor Tom Wolf indirectly confirmed news reports of an investigation. Wolf said cheating is absolutely unacceptable and that if it went on, quote, people will pay the price. Acting New Jersey Attorney General John Hoffman is resigning to take a job at Rutgers University. Two people with direct knowledge of the move indicate that he'll become senior vice president and general counsel for the university. They spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly before the official announcement. Hoffman has been the state's top law enforcement official since June 2013. At Rutgers, the Marlton resident will oversee an office of about 18 attorneys. 45 degrees, cloudy at 612. This evening's forecast, there's a likelihood of a rain-snow mix tonight, perhaps into tomorrow morning, little or no snow accumulation. Tonight's low, 34 degrees. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on WHYY. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's take a music break. Diane Monroe is a Philadelphia-based violinist who explores a wide range of music, touring and recording extensively with jazz groups and chamber music ensembles. Here she is with her own quartet with a piece entitled Groovin' Roots. Thank you.
violinist Diane Monroe with her quartet of Tony Maselli on vibes, Tony Marino on bass, and percussionist Todd Eisler. We heard Groovin' Roots. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on Pledge Free Y-Stream.
The right school can make all the difference. Supporting WHYY, Delaware Valley Friends, a Quaker College preparatory school in Paoli for students who learn differently. Delaware Valley Friends is committed to providing small classes, individual attention, state-of-the-art technology, and an accredited curriculum and faculty. An information session is Sunday, February 7th from 1 to 3. More information about Delaware Valley Friends at dvfs.org. Expanded summer program for grades 5 to 11, enrolling now.
Frederick Living supports WHYY. Frederick Living, a continuing care retirement community nestled in the beautiful countryside of Montgomery County, is proud to announce the expansion of their campus. The meadows at Frederick Living will consist of 55 cottages clustered in an innovative design based on the pocket neighborhood concept. Frederick Living is now taking reservations. Details about scheduling a visit at 610-754-7878. That's 610-754-7878. Frederick Living. Live well.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. The New Hope-Lambertville Bridge, connecting two towns, spanning centuries, is a documentary debuting on WHYY-TV this Sunday afternoon at 2. Joining me to discuss the span's storied history and importance are Roy Ziegler, chair of the committee that produced the documentary for the New Hope Historical Society, and John Weber, the documentary's writer, director, narrator, and a familiar voice to WHYY listeners. He's a news anchor here at the station as well. Roy, John, thanks for joining me on Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
Nice being with you, Dave.
Roy, early on in the documentary, it lays down this challenge, conjecturing that the New Hope-Lambertville Bridge, from an economic standpoint, is more important than either the Golden Gate or Brooklyn bridges. Quite the claim. Expand on that notion.
Well, thinking about the fact that the Old York Road connected Philadelphia to New York City, and that the halfway point of that road was the Delaware River, and that was where New Hope was located in Lambertville. To get from Philadelphia to New York, you had to cross the river. Before the bridge, it all depended on what the weather conditions were. So if it snowed or ice, the rain, a lot of times flooding, you could not cross the river. So commerce couldn't really thrive. And once that bridge was built, both those towns became industrial giants in the very early part of the 19th century.
And, John, we quickly learned that weather continues to plague the bridge. It fell not once, not twice, but three times. And there are an array of historians and other interests that helped bring the story to light. How did you assemble this cast of informed characters?
Well, certainly Roy was a huge help in assembling people from throughout the area. He's a wealth of knowledge. He is the expert on Benjamin Parry, who is considered to be the father of New Hope and was the driving force in getting the bridge built. It was a fairly easy task as far as assembling the people because the players are all right there in the area.
The technical name for the bridge included the term toll bridge, but I think that hasn't been collected in quite a while. And when it was last collected, I think the toll was 2 cents.
Depending on how many cows or pigs you had across.
Ah, but not how many pumpkins, because that was referring back to the flood of 1903. Isn't that right, John?
That's correct. It was called the Pumpkin Flood because the flood was in October, and the amount of rain that dropped in the Delaware Valley was tremendous. It washed pumpkins out of the fields and into the river, and pumpkins could be seen bobbing up and down throughout the Delaware River, and that's why it got the name the Pumpkin Flood.
Roy, obviously a lovely spring, summer, or fall day, New Hope and Lambertville attract many, many tourists. And what is the traffic on the bridge during those peak seasons?
We pointed out in the documentary that the traffic's amazing because there are more people cross the New Hope-Lambertville Bridge on a weekend than cross the Brooklyn Bridge. And it is the most crossed bridge in the entire span of the Delaware River for pedestrians.
It's estimated that roughly 14,000 people will cross that bridge on foot on a busy weekend day.
John, we learned that the most recent great flood, that of 1955, took a toll on the bridge. It did reopen after several months of repairs. Is there a general consensus now that the bridge as it stands is once and for all impervious to the elements, or are folks still keeping their fingers crossed?
Well, we always keep our fingers crossed up and down the Delaware River, but certainly it survived the flood of 55, which is considered to be the flood of record on the Delaware River. So if it survived that, we would hope that it could survive anything. We've been assured by bridge engineers and the people at the Delaware River Toll Bridge Commission that it's got plenty of life left in it.
The documentary includes plenty of images of the bridge spanning 200 years. Talk about the challenge assembling those great photographs and drawings.
It was a challenge, but we had a number of folks in the Bucks County and Hunterdon County, where Lambertville is located, who had been collecting these documents, pictures, videos, films from over the last 80, 90 years. And some had photographs that are actually older than that. So John Weber and Delaware Valley Video did a spectacular job in assembling those and selecting those as far as the continuity of the bridge construction was concerned, and then what happened after that.
The New Hope Lambertville Bridge, connecting two towns spanning two centuries, debuts on WHYY-TV this Sunday afternoon at 2. I've been joined by Roy Ziegler, chairman of the committee that put together the documentary for the New Hope Historical Society, and the documentary's writer, director, and narrator, John Weber, also known to listening audiences here as a WHYY news anchor. Roy, John, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
You're welcome.
Dave.
Thank you.
In 1969, nearly 50% of students in the United States walked to school. Now, it's less than 15%. And with parents concerned about traffic, weather, and safety, jumping in the car is, well, just easier. But in one Montgomery town, there's an effort underway to change the culture, as WHYY's Jessica McDonald reports from Pottstown.
It's a cold winter morning, and it's time to get to school. But for these kids, there is no yellow bus coming to pick them up. They are the bus. A handful of volunteers in neon green vests are on hand to help corral the kids and get them safely to Pottstown's Rupert Elementary.
All right, be careful of the puddle when we cross here.
The walking school bus is a simple concept, although one that has mostly caught on only in the UK, Canada, and Australia and New Zealand. 10-year-old Liana is all for it.
It's fun.
Yeah, why?
Because I get to meet all my friends.
Fellow fourth grader Soraya agrees. She used to walk by herself.
So you like this better?
Yeah.
But for others, it's a harder sell.
Do you like walking?
No. It is freezing.
The weather can certainly be a challenge. And for some of these kids, especially the little ones, the mile and a half trek can be long. The idea began as a practical solution when a major road in Pottstown, High Street, was no longer classified as a hazardous roadway, and Rupert did away with its traditional buses.
The need came up more immediately, like, hey, our community needs this because they're having some challenges in getting some children to school.
Rupert principal Matthew Moyer says the walking bus lets parents go ahead and get to work and know their kids won't be on their own. He's hoping it will reduce tardiness and boost attendance. The school hopes the added physical activity will also improve academic performance, mental health, and help kids lose weight. Leading the effort is Pottstown's wellness coordinator, David Genova, a tall and trim former personal trainer who's passionate about exercise.
Kids love to move. You know, the human body is meant to move.
Anecdotally, the bus, which was launched in October, has gone well.
The kids love it. And you know what? I've heard comments that the teachers say, some of them that used to show up not ready to learn are ready to learn because they've exerted some energy prior to getting to class. You gotta love that.
That's Kim Stillwell, a parent volunteer. But to truly tell if the walking bus makes a difference, Genova has brought in Mary Louise Mitstarfer, a graduate student at the University of the Sciences in Philadelphia.
With the piloting of the walking school bus in one school and having two very similar demographic schools, it became the perfect case study.
She says other walking school buses generally haven't helped kids shed pounds, but they do have other benefits.
You create a sense of safety within the neighborhood. You reduce car traffic. You increase foot traffic.
In the case of Pottstown's bus, the community effects might be the strongest. Most walking buses use parents as volunteers, but Genova tapped primarily into local businesses.
I try to tie the walking school bus in with worksite wellness, getting their employees more physically active in the morning will make them more productive throughout the workday, and that's the way I kind of sold it.
The district vetted each volunteer, had them submit to background checks, and provided a two-day training session. Genova says six or seven businesses are now involved. The unusual design allows for community members not normally exposed to school children, teachers, and parents to be more integrated.
You're really breaking down boundaries, and you're creating friendships, and you're reducing the amount of strangers in the neighborhood.
Mitstarfer calls this social capital, and along with other health indicators like body mass index, it's one of the things she'll be monitoring. The bus does face some long odds. Genova says some 95% of walking school buses eventually fail. He doesn't see that as an option.
Other school districts do this as something fun to do once a week, once a month. What we're doing is this is our main mode of transportation. This is how we're getting some of these kids to school because we don't have busing.
About an hour after the first kids began walking, the group has made it to school, and it's time to hand out some golden tickets for good behavior.
I was good.
Didn't you punch me like two or three times?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that doesn't qualify. But it gives you something to aspire to.
Tomorrow, he will get another chance. I'm Jessica McDonald, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas with help today from the intrepid Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Supporting WHYY, Rutgers School of Business at Camden, offering graduate programs to help meet the individual needs of working professionals. For current and future business leaders, Rutgers Camden offers a flexible evening MBA Mondays through Saturdays, a 21-month cohort-based professional MBA program on Saturdays. For accounting professionals, the Rutgers Camden Business School offers master's programs in accounting and taxation, held at the Rutgers Camden campus and in Princeton. 856-225-6452 or at business.camden.rutgers.edu.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. A virtuoso with chops that defy comparison, says the New York Times of Yefim Bronfman. Bronfman joins the Philadelphia Orchestra and conductor Vladimir Yurovsky for Beethoven's Emperor Concerto on Valentine's weekend. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or online February 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th, Valentine's weekend at the Kimmel Center. Beethoven's Emperor Concerto with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Get more of the shows you love with our newest member benefit. WHYY Passport gives you extended access to an on-demand library of quality programming, bringing you your favorite shows through our web video player or any PBS app, anytime, anywhere. Catch PBS classics and all your local favorites with this exclusive WHYY member benefit. To get started with WHYY Passport, visit whyy.org/passport.